What's up, everybody? You're listening to Before the Whistle, and we are back finally after a long hiatus. I'm Matt, and I'm as accompanied by, as always,
Andrew.
How's everyone doing today? If you're looking to follow us on Twitter, you can follow us at BFW Podcast. You can follow my personal account at Costa underscore Matt, and Andrew, you can follow him at Andrew Costa 84. This is a new sports podcast that's taking place in Toronto, as you all know. And if you don't know, well, now you know. How you been, dude?
Good.
Easter weekend. It's Easter weekend, so everyone listening, happy Easter. We all had our family stuff going on. A lot's happened since the last time we recorded. Some terrible shit happened in the world, so our thoughts and prayers to everyone that was affected by that, if you happen to be listening. And also, Batman vs. Superman dropped. We both got to see it. What did you think of it?
I liked it. It was good.
It was a lot better than the reviewers were giving it. They kind of shitted on it.
Yeah, I was expecting a steaming pile of crap, so I'm surprised, disappointed. Mm-hmm. I'm a mix of emotions.
Yeah, for anyone that doesn't know, we're also very big comic fans, the both of us, especially the comic movies. So we were really looking forward to Batman vs. Superman, especially the Batman aspect of it, because we're both massive Batman fans. But besides the point, we're going to get started with the Blackhawks here, because it's funny, they're playing the Canucks right now. We have the game on TV, and we're watching as we record, but they've been on a pretty rough stretch of games. They haven't been very good as of late. They've almost dropped to a wild card spot. I think Nashville's only a couple points behind them. Now, are they slowly losing the mantra of playoff contender or champion contender, given the pedigree and talent they have? Just the recent results and the recent performances kind of make you question what's going on with them. Is it fatigue? Is it just they're losing their touch? Is it just one of those years? Is it a bad run?
It's just there's a lot of hockey, and they've played a lot of hockey. Mm-hmm. I mean, the amount of conference finals that they've been to just in the past 6 years it's a lot of hockey, plus Olympics,
All-Star games.
It's just, it wears on you. Really, really wears on you hard. So I wouldn't say that they're out of it. Chicago's that team. They're a playoff team. And that's all that matters.
Well, absolutely.
They just got to get to the party.
But you think once they get to the party, they're going to have enough steam in the tank? Like, Kane took 3 days off of hockey completely to rest up. So you can see that it's slowly eating away at them.
They'll be playoff ready. They know how to do it. By this stage, they know what it takes to win a cup. They know what it takes to make deep runs.
They have such a tough competition even out of their own division, because Nashville's good, St. Louis is good, Dallas is good.
Yeah, I mean,
Anaheim, LA's back.
You put them in any other conference, and then, I mean, there's no question that they're going to be a playoffs. It's just, it's a long season. You're going to have stretches where you're dominant. You're going to have stretches where you're weaker. And it's just unfortunate for them that they're in a division that's very talented.
It's the best division in hockey, I think. Like, the Central Division just that.
It's hard to say, because you look at all those teams and you stack them up against every team in the East, and it's just, you know, 9 out of 10 times your Western teams are going to be favored, be it Nashville, St. Louis, versus most of the East.
You're the only questionable teams out of the East that you're looking at are maybe it's Washington, which is the best team in the NHL, and then you're looking at Tampa Bay and New York. But even then, do you really take them as a serious contender when comparing them to your Western Conference juggernauts like the Kings, Blues, and such forth?
Again, it's the leadership there, the leadership group. They made some good deadline acquisitions that I mean, there's some depth there as well, so you know, they've added quite a bit of depth. So once some of that depth starts to get into the system and the flow of things, I think you'll start to see the Chicago that we know.
So then what about the Ducks? Because it's kind of funny, if everyone remembers, they started the year off pretty poorly, and by pretty poorly there was question marks about if they were going to fire Bruce Boudreau.
It's amazing that he still
and
has a job.
It's weird, they made a couple trades, they stayed patient, they kept the coach, and they've been next to Washington the best team in the NHL since the turning point, I guess, that trade. I think they picked up David Perron from them, and now look at them, they're on a rip. But again, is this the year that they can do it? Because every year their coach, Bruce Boudreau, chokes in the playoffs.
Well, he had his deep run last year, and again, came up against a very good Blackhawks team. So, I mean, they can do it. There's no question why they couldn't. they are favorites in a lot of people's mindsets to be.
Well, at the start of the year, they were the leading favorites for the Stanley Cup. Now we're talking literally at the start of the year. Now everything kind of changed and train went off the rails once they were putting out terrible performances. But everything's kind of gone as expected. So it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks because the NHL season's kind of coming to an end. This is a stretch run, right? This is a grind.
This is what makes or breaks for teams.
Yeah, for real. Moving on, we're kind of going to jump another sport here because there's a couple international friendlies that happened over the weekend. Portugal played Belarus, I think it was, or Bulgaria.
Bulgaria, yeah.
They lost 1-0. Which I find quite humorous. But the big one that has everyone talking was England versus Germany. Now, England...
The only people talking about that are the British.
Yeah, seriously, because they were going nuts. Now, it's funny because you have Jamie Vardy, this overnight success, I guess you can really call him, because nobody saw this guy doing what he has been doing all year, scoring a wonderful flick-on goal against Germany. Now, Germany was winning 2-0. England came back and won 3-2. Now, that's not typical of the English to come back and win a game, or let alone to beat the Germans. Should we be looking more into this, or is it really just a friendly who gives a shit?
Germany hasn't looked very good since they won the World Cup.
No, they haven't looked as convincing.
No, and there's been some shock results, and this is still a friendly. And I'll give it to this young crop of English players, you see what Tottenham's doing, you see
Harry Kane.
What Leicester's doing and what's coming out of there. So, I mean, they do look promising, but it's just, it's a friendly that you're coming to the, especially for the English, you're coming to the end of the season, the last stretch of it. I wouldn't put too much stock.
But they have Jamie Vardy. You understand, yeah. This guy in 2005 was working in a factory, in 2011 was in Division 5, and I think he's leading the Premier League, or he's
up there.
He's up there. I think he's tied for league goals. Yeah, for goals. Like, it's kind of crazy what they've been doing. And talking about English, because we follow
more Mahrez than it is Vardy.
Well, yes. Mahrez has been. And Danny Drinkwater. We can't forget Danny Drinkwater over here. Quietly just winning games for them. But coming to the Euro, England always has this lore around them that they're supposed to be the best international team. Would you not say that they're one of the more overrated international teams? Or am I being a little greedy by saying that?
I don't know. You could kind of look at it on either side.
Because, like, the results have never been there. They're always supposed to have such wonderful teams, but they're always underperforming. Like, I've never seen an English team where I said, they have a really good team, they have a very good chance.
Well, I mean, the early 2000s to mid-2000s, they had a pretty quality team. They just couldn't figure out how to work together.
Yeah, okay, fair enough.
Too many chefs in the kitchen between Lampard, Gerrard, and... Mm-hmm.
But even then, you wouldn't compare them up against the Brazils in 2002?
No, definitely not. I just think
Germany
that,
even?
No, and obviously you've seen what happens with them up against teams even like Portugal. I don't know how to describe it. I just think they've been kind of their own worst enemy in a lot of tournaments.
Mm-hmm. Well,
they've drawn poorly against... You know, the luck of the draw, they just have drawn teams that either they can't get results again. And mm-hmm. I mean, some calls have gone against them. You look at the World Cup,
2010.
The Germany game, the ball.
Convincingly,
the line,
Germany has to be in the conversation.
You know, so it's tough to say.
I don't know. It's interesting. I've never looked at the English as, oh my God, they're the greatest national team. Because I always look at other countries like France.
I think they underperform. I do. I definitely don't think of them as a world powerhouse. I mean, how many players do they have that you could actually say are a
world
superstar?
That's just it. I don't think there's anyone really that's
right
world
now,
class.
You don't have anybody that really the rest of the world would want. You don't have Serie A clubs lining up to sign a Rooney or a Madrid lining up to sign a Rooney or even a Barcelona for that matter.
There was a period where Rooney was considered, but again,
he was,
it
but
just
even he's
faded
not,
away.
And I don't know if it's misuse of Rooney or what it is. I just, he's not
the same player.
No, he had a brilliant start at his career, but right now he's not.
It's weird because he's
not that out-and-out striker.
Well, that's
that
just it.
He started dropping
further back and was playing more as a midfielder, and it got kind of confusing because you didn't know how to really play the play him? How do you build your team around the guy and structure it? Is he a midfielder? Is he a forward? I wonder if he gives the England team problems.
You know, it's tough to say unless you're in that dressing room. And I mean, Roy Hodgson's definitely got some tough decisions to make between now and June.
You know, it's funny. He's the highest paid international coach.
Makes sense.
And then the Russian coach is doing it for free. Because Putin definitely doesn't want to pay that guy's salary, or the Russian FA. Maybe his currency is his life.
Even Football Manager is like being the coach of the Leafs. You know, you're going to make more money because it just means that much more sometimes.
Yeah, Chicago just scored, if anyone wants to know. So they're leading 2-1 over Vancouver. But what about coming? Well, since we're on the topic of soccer, the Euro Cup's up and around the corner. Who do you really think is a contender? Like, we said Germany, but they haven't looked good. Spain isn't the same Spain that we've come to know and appreciate.
No, it's going to be an interesting tournament because with the added teams, I wouldn't be surprised if you get a little bit of a March Madness feel with some upsets. And
well, the thing is, you're looking at Wales had an amazing qualification, and they're in the same group as England.
Bales, yeah.
And then the other thing you're looking at is, because there's more teams, Italy now, because of the way the groups work out and the seeding, they have the toughest road to actually get to the final. They cross over and play the top teams of almost every group, yeah. Unfortunately.
It's the draw. That's these tournaments, a lot of times, it's mm-hmm. the draw.
Like, would you consider Italy a contender? Because I don't look at
I
them like they
do. I consider them a contender because they're that team that
knows how to put it together with Bonucci and
well, they're just that team that
Verratti.
Whenever you write them off, like in 2006, nobody gave them going into that tournament.
They had an easy road. The only tough game they really had.
Germany had a pretty fairly non-competitive road all the way to their World Cup.
Well, I think the only tough game they had really was France, Argentina. In the final.
Yeah, it wasn't a laborious.
And Brazil, but Brazil wasn't a good team.
That Brazilian team was not.
They weren't.
You know, but.
Would you consider France?
Yeah, of course. You always consider the host nation.
Like Paul Pogba is there.
They did it last time they were in France, so.
Benzema. Now, speaking of that, because talking to France, and it was funny, I saw an article today about the best footballer in Europe and of all time. Like the best European player. So number one was Zinedine Zidane, and underneath them was Cristiano Ronaldo. Now the Sky Sports did this
article. I'm surprised article. There was no Messi on the list.
Well, he's not European. They're looking at European born.
European birth. Okay.
Right? So it not played in Europe. Now, would you not consider Ronaldo better than Zidane? Now, I understand they're two different positions and it's tough to compare, but Ronaldo's dominance has been duly noted for the last 6 or 7 years.
90% of his career, yes. The only thing is Zidane has those international trophies, which bode very well.
But are those international trophies as big as they once were? I feel like the Champions League has kind of overtaken that spot.
No, it's still...
You think it's still dominant?
That comment, I mean...
Because
we still have the who's better, Messi, Ronaldo. If Argentina wins that World Cup, Messi wins...
But see,
the tournament in a World Cup, the discussion's over because it'll always come back to, well, Messi has a World Cup and Ronaldo doesn't.
But even if Messi doesn't win the World Cup, I still think he's the best player ever.
Yes,
so does that not trump the whole idea of, well, you need the World Cup?
It's going to be kind of like a little bit of a Dan Marino situation. You always have that.
Asterisk beside
especially
them.
Especially in Messi's case, because he's got a squad of Argentine players that are phenomenal.
But
there's no reason why they can't be.
Yes, I agree. I agree with Argentina. They have the quality of players, but I don't think you can't sit there and say, no, look at how good they are. They were dominating that they're simply better. Like, I love Zidane, don't get me wrong, and I'm not trying to bash him. I think he's one of the best players ever. But when you sit and watch what Ronaldo's doing, you're never going to see this again. Not for another 10, 15 years. Zidane wasn't even doing this. And I get he was a controlling midfielder and he sat back and controlled the game. But even still, what Ronaldo and Messi have been doing for year in and year out is kind of unheard of. Remember when, think back to 2005, 2006, when someone scored a hat-trick in a game, that was a big deal. That was an impressive feat, especially in a soccer match. Now when players score a hat-trick, it's like, well, that's great, but Messi scored 4 in a game and Ronaldo scored 5.
Yeah, but it's also the league now is not what it was either. You know, these Madrid and Barca teams are head and shoulders above the rest of La Liga.
So would you say that
aside from
the league is better now than it was, or are you getting at the fact that it was a better game before? Because you like the game has changed evidently,
yeah.
And you have two guys that clearly
think it was more balanced before.
You think it was more balanced?
I think it was more balanced before. Now it seems a lot. It just seems like, or is it just that the
quality of players,
the
are
quality
that much
of the players on the specific teams, like your Bayerns, your Madrids, your Barca, are just that good? Because lately it's been the same teams, mm-hmm. in European glory.
Well, I wonder if it's been a bit of a drop off in overall quality from players around the world, and it just seems like there's a select group that have fielded together a wicked, powerful team, and everyone else is just there. You got your pretenders, kind of, right? Like we started at the start of the year. Me, you, and a couple friends, we all sat down and we all discussed who we thought the Final Four of the Champions League would be. And we all said Real Madrid, Barcelona, PSG, and the other one was City, or some would say PSG, Chelsea, but Bayern. The three that everyone had was Real, Bayern, and Barca. Like, is that fun? Is that fun going into a tournament kind of knowing how it's going to play out?
No, it's watered down a little bit. You miss the upsets. You miss those tournaments where, you know, a Porto comes out of nowhere and wins,
like Monaco,
Monaco, or
Bayern Leverkusen,
or an Ajax pushing into the semis. Like, it's missing, the sport's missing that these days, at least the modern game, in my opinion.
Even Benfica going to the semifinals a few years back in 2006 when Barcelona won it.
Yeah.
Like, you don't see that anymore, and it's lost its luster, I guess you can say.
Yeah, even the Champions League now, it doesn't really get exciting until you hit the final eight.
Yeah, like you get your odd quarterfinals round of 16 game that's somewhat interesting, but even then it's interesting because the names are big, but the actual matchup isn't that exciting. Like,
no,
we had the Bayern-Juventus game, yeah. That was very interesting.
That was interesting. Very entertaining game.
But then you look at Arsenal-Barca, and it's, oh, that's a big game. But is
you
it really?
No.
Because Arsenal's clearly a class below Barcelona.
Yes, and even if they were on the same page, they'd find a way to coach themselves into a poor position, as they always do.
It's funny, because Arsenal's great at finishing fourth place, but they never even finish anywhere close to fourth place in the Champions League.
Yeah.
What a team. And I wonder why they haven't even thought about moving on from Arsene Wenger.
He makes money. He doesn't spend frugally. He keeps him competitive enough.
Does it bother you that sports is that what sports is becoming? It's just
well,
such a business.
Been, it's
always
business.
Been, but
it's always business.
Do you think as a fan that doesn't bother you at all?
No, because it's always been a part of the game.
It's just exactly what it is, eh? It's just, like, I don't know, it drives me nuts sometimes, because when I think about it, it's, well, why don't we get a better coach, one that might have to spend a bit more money, but if we put together a winning team and we can put together a solid group of players and win, wouldn't that be better for them? Like, look at Barcelona, what they've been doing. They're making more money because they've spent more money, but they're winning, and winning helps sell.
Yes, of course.
Like, they're the most popular team in the world.
Of course, but Barcelona is a special situation because it took a long time to get there.
Yeah.
The system and...
Well, speaking of Barcelona so heavily, Johan Cruyff passing away was kind of a surprise.
Nobody really knew that I know of that he was sick.
And he was a total innovator of the game that we know, right? Coming from Ajax and the Dutch system with the total football, you see that being the tiki-taka being a derivation from that style of football.
Derived from it, for sure. Yeah, no, it was a big loss to the modern, or no, big loss to the game in general to lose a legend like that.
That's another national team that I find very fascinating, because they've always put together pretty good teams. They're kind of hard to predict, because one year they're going to go to the semis or the finals of a tournament, and the next year they're going to bow out of the group stage. But they've always had players and managers that have been influential in the game at some level. You look at Johan Cruyff, Marco van Basten, Schneider, Robin. Like, they've always put together teams, yet they haven't ever won a national tournament. Are they more disappointing? Are they the most disappointing team? Because even Portugal...
Didn't they win a Euro?
No, they might have won a Euro, but they've never won a World.
No.
And is that
two
disappointing?
Finals, two or three finals that they've lost.
You find that disappointing at all?
I think so, just because of the quality that they managed to produce in such an individual level.
Like, even Portugal. Portugal is known to have put together some talented teams, but they've never won. The closest thing they've come to winning was a runners-up medal in Euro 2004.
Yeah, and they've won the youth tournament.
But again, does anyone really bring that up as a prestigious trophy?
No, but it's still... It's what you would expect.
Like, apparently, I was talking, and a big friend of mine who really follows the Portuguese league was saying that Portugal...
Euro
like,
88, I believe, is the one
they won. When Van Basten scored that volley, I believe it was.
Yeah, I think so.
Now, apparently, the Benfica and Porto spent... They overhauled their youth system. And they've put more money into their youth system trying to develop younger and better Portuguese players. I think... Do you think that's going to benefit the national team?
Yes, of course, because that's what Germany's done, and look at the reward of it.
World Cup.
It all comes with investing. This has been a project in the making. That World Cup is the project of, 10 years worth of investing. Or more so, I'd say probably 15 to 20 years.
The best
thing... Starting with the youth system.
Can I say the best thing the German national team ever accomplished? And it might be the most German thing they've ever accomplished, but they had investors buy property in Brazil and built a facility for the national team during the World Cup to stay at.
Yep.
And then gave it back to Brazil after.
Yep.
Like, it's the most German thing, just being efficient and putting together.
That's them basically saying, we're coming here to win, and they did.
Yeah, the Germans did. And they deserved it because they've been the one national team outside of Euro 2004 that has literally been in and around the conversation.
They've been a tournament team since 2006.
Yeah, definitely. Now, we could sit and talk soccer all day, but we're doing a short episode just because we're tired. We've had way too much food because of Easter. But there's a pretty interesting piece of news that came out, and I don't want to say it's a surprise because really it's foregone conclusion that this was going to happen, but Marcus Stroman was named opening day starter.
Yeah, now, no brainer. We knew that.
It was coming, right?
Like the last pitch in October.
Now, my question is, are we going to see the best Marcus Stroman this season, or?
I think so. I think we're going to see a mature Marcus Stroman. I think now we're going to start to see the Stroman we're going to expect to see for the next few years.
We're not going to get the Ricky Romero, really promising.
I don't think so. I think that kid's work rate, he's just his attitude, his mentality. He's just that kid's all about improving, and I just think he has the mental capacity and the determination and the drive to not let the Ricky Romero happen.
But would you even consider this a thought that maybe he might be we're expecting too much from him? Because what we've seen is such a small sample size. You got to think, he hasn't had a full season. No. He came up at the end of two seasons ago, pitched really well, and everyone got really excited. Then looking forward into last season, we thought, okay, we have Stroman. Like, he's going to be the guy to see. And of course, in the most Toronto thing and most Toronto way, he goes and blows his knee and is pretty much gone the whole season.
Yeah, that's one way to look at it. Or you could look at it as it was great because it allowed us to essentially have another trade deadlining signing when he came back.
Now, there's a lot of talk about Sanchez coming into the rotation.
Yeah, he's looking good, but he's always been...
Do you think they're going to put an inning cap on them and they're going to manage their innings? How many innings? Not let them get too high up?
Possibly, and I think that's going to have to do with the fact that they've got a good number of arms going into the season this year, and then you've got to factor in it's a long season as well. A lot of these guys don't have the miles on them, and you don't want to burn it. So
they've looked good in spring training, but again, Grapefruit League is
this team
literally
going to be a lot better than the team we saw last year.
I wonder if confidence has a lot to do with it.
I don't think that one striker or the one. Striker, I don't know where I'm going here. The one starting pitcher in Price having that ace is enough to make this team better. I mean, having an ace is always going to make your team better, but I don't think without it, this team won't be good because they're just too damn good offensively. Well, if they just have very competent pitching.
I think that's
exactly
what it is.
Out the middle, they're one of the best teams in the American League. There's no question.
Troy Tulowitzki's looking very good.
Yeah, they're just...
Goins has looked good.
And I think when you have that kind of infield and outfield defensive quality, it makes any pitcher more comfortable on the mound. And if a pitcher's more comfortable, he's going to throw a better game.
Well, as you said, I think the pitchers kind of have that cushion or security blanket because you don't have to be afraid because guys that can go out there and hit a couple dingers for you.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this is a season where they have a very good chance, and I think they really should push for it.
It's going to be a great season.
I hope so. I'm really looking forward to it. I'm also looking forward to this illustrious leadoff hitter position, because that seems to be the big debate.
Yes.
Everyone's comparing Saunders to Kevin Pillar.
It looks like it's going to be Pillar, just from what we've seen in spring training. He's been kind of the guy.
Would you say it's overrated, the leadoff hitter?
It's not. You just need a guy to get on base. My concern initially with Pillar was that
his getting on base wasn't the greatest.
Yeah, and he's not a guy that'll take a pitch and walk. But, you know, I don't think people are going to want to put him on base, give him that opportunity, just knowing that you got Donaldson, Batista, and Encarnacion coming up right
and then
now.
Troy Tulowitzki's right there too, and Michael Saunders has been hitting very well. He's seen the ball very, very well.
There's a lot of options, and it may be Pillar today or on opening day, but few weeks in, you may end up see it being Saunders. I think at some point you may even see it be Tulowitzki. It's not there's the depth there, and it's not. There's good leadoff guys, but you're not bred to be a leadoff guy, if you know
and
what I mean.
You don't need an amazing leadoff guy. And if
you just
anyone,
gotta get somebody that can get on base.
If anyone's going to reference the Kansas City Royals from last season in the postseason, they were hitting far above average. Like, they had guys that were not that good at getting on base. Who was their opening? Was it Escobar?
Yeah, I believe so.
He was getting on base at every bat, and I'm not sure if that's the player, but...
Well, that's good scouting.
That's just it. I think they came out and said that they had a feeling they were going to play the Jays, so they were doing video on them months in advance.
Apparently they knew just by David Price's breathing habit that when he was going to throw his changeup or his breaking ball.
Is that not a little scary? That, like, they've done so much research on one single player that they just know.
This is a sport that's built, advanced stats are everything in the sport now, so that's not surprising, I think. You know, like fighters watching tape before going into a fight. You gotta know.
You get their tendencies. You get to see what their habits are. Is that good for sports, do you think? Because even it's seeping into hockey.
Well, that's what good coaching is. That's what it's about. It's not always about the talent. And at the same time, it's what adds parity.
I understand that completely.
David can beat Goliath so long as David knows where Goliath is weak, right?
But there are certain things that numbers don't say. There are certain things about numbers that they won't tell you the whole story. Like, Taves, I think, the ideal and comparison to how numbers do not tell it all. Because statistically, he's not the greatest player, but what he does elsewhere is incredible.
Yeah, but it's also where his numbers show up. His playoff numbers are phenomenal, so...
Don't look at numbers completely, because I think they're very important and I think everyone should pay attention to them, but I don't think you can sell your decision based on numbers only. Like, I think there has to be like a hybrid theory about it, where you heavily look and rely on numbers, but you have that in between of, okay, well, knowing hockey or baseball yet knowing numbers too.
Yeah. It's, you gotta have a little bit of both, but the numbers don't lie.
Yeah, I hope not. I hope we're doing our stats and we're really doing the research and the Jays are gonna be ready. Because I want it again. I'm not gonna lie, that last offseason was incredible.
Last postseason, yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a long time coming.
Yes. And on that bombshell, we're gonna bid farewell because we're tired.
Yeah. Weekend.
We've talked enough to you guys. So hopefully next week we'll be able to get together and do something on a Sunday or someday. We're going to try.
We'll
play it by ear. But I think we'll have another episode up again next weekend. There might be a guest coming on, a friend of the show. A few of them have asked to come on. So we're going to have some more guests, more people coming in just to
make it fun.
Bright up the conversation.
Like here.
Yeah, exactly. Take care, everybody. Happy Easter.